Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to Real Science Radio. I am Bob Benyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church. There is an end times prophecy fad right now on the blood moons, a series of eclipses that began last year and will end later this year in 2015. Now, since the blood moons are lunar eclipses and so fall into the domain of science, astronomy, it seems fitting to discuss them on Real Science Radio. In the Hebrew Scriptures, the prophet Joel foretells of a time when the sun will be darkened and the moon turned to blood. That is, it will appear red, as happens in an eclipse, with its color provided by the same mechanism that causes sunrises and sunsets to appear reddish. The term blood moon is reminiscent of Joel's prophecy because it mentions the moon being turned into blood, that is, it will look reddish. Now, the scriptures, they came to us as holy men moved of God, were inspired to write by the Holy Spirit. And here is what the Hebrew prophet Joel wrote in chapter 2 of his book, Joel 2, beginning in verse 28. And it shall come to pass afterward that I will pour out my spirit on all flesh. Your sons and your daughters shall prophesy. Your old men shall dream dreams. Your young men shall see visions. And also on my men servants and my maid servants, I will pour out my spirit in those days. And I will show wonders in the heavens and in the earth, blood and fire and pillars of smoke. The sun shall be turned into darkness and the moon into blood before the coming of the great and terrible day of the Lord. And it shall come to pass that whoever calls on the name of the Lord shall be saved. Now this prophecy, as with prophecy in Scripture, this is inspired by God. It's valid. It's accurate. The most important part here is the very last statement that whoever calls on the name of the Lord shall be saved. We could live forever with God if we want to, if we humble ourselves before Him and trust in Jesus Christ, His death and resurrection. Now, this prophecy also speaks of an end times occurrence that will be supernatural, not of the natural occurrences of lunar eclipses. Joel doesn't just speak of the moon as blood red, but also of the sun being darkened, with these happenings not being natural events, but, as Joel writes, being wonders, as in signs and wonders, miracles, signs and wonders, that is, supernatural. And along those lines, notice that Joel doesn't speak of repeated lunar eclipses, but a singular lunar event tied to a singular event of the sun going dark. But let's now discuss a blood moon. So the moon appears red during an eclipse because of the scattering of light in the Earth's atmosphere, which then reflects off the eclipsed moon, bouncing back to us, and it makes the moon appear reddish in color like a sunrise. Now, I've had a long-time interest in the calendar, the length of the year, eclipses. As our listeners know, I've recently had a letter published in a peer-reviewed journal that dealt with calendars, the lunar orbit, and the length of the year. And if you Google the three words, 360 day year, so a number, 360, and then the word day and year, Google 360 day year, out of 100 million pages, Google ranks our website on its first page of results as the fourth most popular web page at 360dayyear.com. That's our Real Science Radio website, 360dayyear.com. So yes, calendars, orbits, astronomy, and eclipses, they have much to teach us about God's creation and the history of the world. And I agree that some of these for sure will be factors in the end times. But in 2008, a pastor, Mark Biltz, observed that sets of four blood moons, they're called tetrads because there's four of them, sets of four blood moons have been occurring a few times over the last few centuries, and that they've been coinciding with Passover and the Feast of Tabernacles. And there's a megachurch and a televangelist, Pastor John Hagee, who's written a book and made a movie on the four blood moons. Now, one of our members at Denver Bible Church asked me about a friend of his who thinks that the blood moons are omens of the second coming, not unlike Mark Biltz, who has implied that Jesus may be returning in the fall of 2015, or based on that. That may have seemed like a safe prediction back in 2008. It was far enough away, but the closer we get, the more that aspect of this whole thing will be minimized. Without looking into the topic, before I did, just chatting with our church member, Mike B., I said that my guess is, my guess is that to make claims of blood moons falling on auspicious dates, the proponents are probably playing loose with the time frames. So we looked up what John Hagee has claimed, and in his movie, he says this, I'll quote, "The thing that compelled me to write The Four Blood Moons was when I discovered the scientific fact NASA was pointing out that it happened in 1492, and it happened in 1948, and it happened in 1967, and it was going to happen in 2015. So that's the quote. Well, wow, 1492, that's an exciting year, no? The web pages that promote his movie, like FourBloodMoonsMovie.com and the Dove Foundation, they talk about Columbus discovering America. Remember, that happened in 1492. And they tie that in with Spain expelling the Jews. Now, okay, discovering America and expelling the Jews. Well, a lot of people discovered America over a period of centuries. And the Jews being expelled is not exactly a one-time phenomenon. Columbus, of course, has nothing to do with Bible prophecy, but it adds to the mystique, the esoteric nature of this claim. And the Jews being expelled from Spain has nothing to do with biblical prophecy. Now, 1948, that's when Israel became a nation. So that is related to the scriptures. But it turns out that John Hagee got his dates wrong. NASA's records show that those two blood moon tetrads, they didn't occur in 1492 and 1948, or beginning then, but in 1493 and 1494, and in 1949 and 1950. So that's just off by a little bit, right? And by the way, they're after the events, which would mean that if there was a pattern there, whatever these current blood moons signified should have already been passed, like last year. Then you're left with 1967, because if you're fudging 1492 and 1948, you know, the year America's discovered, the year Israel becomes a nation, if those dates are fudged a bit, then you're left with the last one, 1967, which did happen to coincide with Israel's Six-Day War. That's true. That's important in modern history and Israel's survival. They had a preemptive attack against a few countries, Syria, Jordan, and Egypt. But it's not like that was Israel's only war, right? They've had their War of Independence. Yeah, they had the Six-Day War, but they also had the Yom Kippur War, and they had the Lebanon War. In fact, they had two of those, and the Gaza War. So just picking out one of Israel's wars because it happened to coincide with lunar eclipses doesn't seem like a strong argument. And so you've lost 1492 and you lost 1948, and then you have sort of a weak 1967, which one date doesn't make a pattern anyway. Let's discuss the blood moons falling on these Jewish feasts of Passover and Tabernacles. They're about 6 months apart, on the 15th of Nisan in the spring and the 15th of Tishri in the fall. Now, that's also interesting, no? Hey, and John Hagee and Pastor Mark Biltz, they make a big deal about the blood moons falling on these feast dates. But remember, the Hebrew calendar is not a solar calendar, but a lunar calendar. And so the coincidences with lunar movements are not surprising, as is claimed in this blood moon fad. For these feast dates in the spring and the fall are in the eclipse seasons, the two eclipse seasons each year when lunar eclipses may occur. And the full moon that disappears during a total eclipse occurs on the 15th day of those months. So I checked with our friend, astronomer Danny Faulkner from Answers in Genesis, and we're actually going to try to get him on the show in a few minutes. I asked him about the blood moons, and he had written a great article on the topic recently, and he pointed out something interesting, which reminded me of John Hagee's exaggeration of the 1493-1494 tetrad when he said it happened in 1492. And again, 1492, I mean, it's exciting, isn't it? These signs in the heavens are happening when America's discovered and Israel becomes a nation. And so 2015, it's got to be, what, either we're going to discover a new nation or the second coming or something. But Danny reminded me that eclipses tend to be visible in just certain regions. Like, for example, this current set of four eclipses, it is not visible in Jerusalem. Now, eclipses are typically visible only from certain places on the globe. And these four lunar eclipses in 2014 and 2015, this tetrad, they are visible in the U.S., yes, but the first three of them could not be viewed from Jerusalem. And in Israel, they'll just get a brief glimpse of the beginning of the fourth eclipse. Now, the same is true, by the way, of the solar eclipse that just happened just, what, a couple weeks ago that Pastor Biltz made a big deal out of. He pointed out that it would fall on the first day of the biblical calendar, but it didn't. It occurred the day before the first day of Israel's biblical calendar. It's more jazzy, right? It's more convincing to say, look, this is going to be a big year because there's a solar eclipse on the first day of the biblical calendar. But there wasn't. It was on the last day of the previous year. And whenever there is a solar eclipse, it's true with every solar eclipse that it happens near the vernal equinox. It always occurs within a day or so of the beginning of the biblical calendar by definition because of how the calendar is set. Oh, and you didn't hear about the total solar eclipse of March 20th, 2015, just a couple weeks ago? Well, that's not surprising. Not only was it not visible in Israel, not only was it not visible in America, but of the total worldwide population of 6 billion, that eclipse was only visible to about 50,000 people, those who live on a couple islands in the North Atlantic and in the Arctic Ocean. Now, that's not much of a sign. Now, one benefit of such end times predictions, however, is that you can test the reliability of certain end times teachers. The claim by many is that the current pope will be the last pope. You've heard that? And that seemed safe. You know, even a book came out, The Last Pope, until he announced that he's going to retire, maybe within a year or two, he said, and then we're likely to have another pope, you know, if the Lord tarries. If the Lord tarries, for as throughout the last 2,000 years, Jesus can return whenever he wants to. His return is imminent. It could happen at any time. And the Bible indicates that when the fullness of the Gentiles comes in, that is, when God has accomplished his purpose with the body of Christ, then Jesus will return. None of that is based on which pope is at the Vatican or whether or not people in Oregon can see an eclipse not visible in Jerusalem. These things simply are not relevant to published biblical prophecy. Published for thousands of years now, these prophets, their writings have been available to the world. And so it's very easy to take current events and to twist them to make it sound like, hey, this is really evidence of a fulfillment of these prophecies. We interviewed the author of a book called The Harbinger, Jonathan Kahn, a pastor from New Jersey, And what an interview that was. And what a description. If you want to see a good example of how you could twist details to make it sound like you have a fulfillment of biblical prophecy, just go to our website, realscienceradio.com/harbinger, or the shortcut, rsr.org/harbinger. So I see that Wally is trying to get Dr. Faulkner on the line. Danny Faulkner, a longtime friend of Real Science Radio, he is an astronomer. His bachelor's degree was in math. He got a master's in physics and a PhD in astronomy from IU. That's in Bloomington, Indiana. For years, over 20 years, was a professor of astronomy at the University of South Carolina in Lancaster. And so we have Danny Faulkner. All right, Dr. Faulkner, welcome back to Real Science Radio.
Thank you, Bob.
Well, thank you for your great article. You wrote it now a couple years ago on the blood moons. And Danny, we've just talked through the issue. I've done an amateur's introduction to the topic as best I could. And I have to say a lot of it is based on your work. But could you talk it through with us? Because we just had the third of this current series of four lunar eclipses. And there's been a lot of hype. There have been books and movies out, the four blood moons. Here at Real Science Radio, we don't really buy in that these are omens or fulfillments of biblical prophecy. But could you share with us your thoughts? You work at the Creation Museum, Answers in Genesis. We just love AIG and the museum. In fact, Danny, I was there just a couple weeks ago with about 15 folks. We went through. Wow, what a fabulous museum. Thank you for working there.
Oh, thank you. I enjoy being here. Well, as far as the so-called blood moons go, it was all started by Mark Biltz. He's a messianic pastor at a church near Tacoma, Washington. Mm-hmm. He began talking about this around 2008 or so, and he's trying to tie the prophecies of Joel 2 and repeated by Peter at Pentecost in Acts 2, where there's a phrase there that talks about the moon being turned to blood. Mm. And he says, well, the most common color that you see during a total lunar eclipse is red, so this is resembling to blood, so therefore this must be what it's talking about. He argues that there was a lunar eclipse the night of the crucifixion, even though it was not a total eclipse, so there wouldn't be any red color anyway. Mm-hmm. And he's really hyped this up and said a lot of things about it. One thing I really object to is the fact that he started this business of calling a total lunar eclipse a blood moon, and that has, unfortunately, in the last year and a half, slipped into common usage. Almost all news reports now don't say lunar eclipse, they say blood moon now. Mm-hmm. And that's just a totally recent change, I think, brought about entirely by Biltz.
Yeah, and one reason that's a shame is because it minimizes the impact of an actual prophetic blood moon.
Sure. You take this moon being turned to blood, but if you look at the rest of the passages there in Acts 2 and Joel 2, in addition, Biltz talks about these eclipses occurring on the high holy days of Judaism, the Passover and Sukkot, and these are high holy days, but it's not that unusual for a lunar eclipse to occur on those dates because those occur on the 15th of the month on a lunar calendar, and that also coincides with full moon, which is the only time you can get a lunar eclipse. So they occur more often than a person might think if they read these materials or hear about these things. And I think it just kind of lowers the bar. Again, the passages are dealing with some very apocalyptic things, and in the midst of this, you're going to talk about lunar eclipses that are just kind of unusually timed. And I think that minimizes what these passages are really talking about. Hmm. I think when these things happen, they'll be perplexing. People will see these things, and they won't have a good explanation for it. We have good explanations for eclipses. And so I think this lowers the bar way, way, way too much.
Well, you point out in your article, and I've mentioned this briefly, that these eclipses, the first three of the current tetrad were not visible in Jerusalem. A solar eclipse that hardly anyone in the world could have seen unless you're in the Arctic Circle, practically.
Yeah. Yeah, it seems to be that the argument is that just knowing there was an eclipse somewhere in the world is all that's important. People don't actually need to experience that. And to me, again, this doesn't really constitute a great sign at all. signs are supposed to be that. People are supposed to see them and be able to read some sort of message from them. Mm. And I just think this is reading way, way, way too much. And you know, Bob, I've been figuring up lately, in my adult lifetime, I've been through 6 or 8 ends of the world. This whole talk about the apocalyptic things coming about, I've heard this back in the 70s, in the early 80s, in the late 80s, early 90s, around 2000, of course, back in 2012.
Hey, Danny, I could relate. I've been on the air for 24 years, 5 days a week. And from long before that, every president is the Antichrist. Every pope is the Antichrist. War is going to usher in the second coming. And these things have been happening for centuries. And there is a good thing. It's good that Christians look to the coming of the Lord. That's a very good thing.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but back around the first millennium, it was, the Black Plague and Halley's Comet. And they were sure that the second coming was right around the corner. In the year 2000, so many Christians were taken in by the Y2K fiasco. And they somehow thought that Jesus was going to return on a computer bug, that a computer glitch was going to usher in the Lord's second coming.
And then don't forget the great disappointment in the 1840s, the Millerites.
I do forget that. Remind me, please.
Well, they had a guy named Miller, and he had predicted the end of the world, I think, in 1843 and then 1844 when that failed. And it caused, tens of thousands of people had sold their possessions, were ready for the end of the world, and they it didn't happen. It caused a great disillusionment. They called it the Great Disappointment. I think it capitalized. It's so great.
Well,
came a number of different sects, and then some cult groups did.
Well, and we have the Jehovah's Witnesses. I have a couple of the books, first edition books by Charles Taze Russell. And the cover of one of his books, Millions Now Living Will Never Die, and he predicted the dates of the second coming. And when those dates came and passed and nothing happened, they said, well, Jesus did return. You just can't see him.
Yeah, that was 100 years ago, 101 years ago. It was 1914.
Okay, so. Yeah. And more recently, we've had somewhat well-known, we've had megachurch pastors, Harold Camping, predicting dates that obviously have come and gone. So it does tend to hurt the reputation of Christians generally when the world realizes that over and over we make claims that are not reliable. So when we share the gospel, they look at us with more doubt than they would have otherwise.
Yeah, and that's my great concern too, is the fact that it's so distracting from the truly important things, and also it discredits our message entirely. You said it very well.
Well, Danny, so we only have another moment or so, but the museum we went through, what a fabulous museum. And you guys have a planetarium there that it's got to be a digital projector.
It's a digital system.
Yeah, and not all planetariums are digital. I mean, they've all been trying to transition over. But it's absolutely gorgeous. And
we have a new show coming out this summer on UFOs.
Oh, you do? Wow.
Oh, yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun.
At the Creation Museum. Boy, I'm going to have to come back just to see that. But then also, and I think this was my third or fourth time through the museum, but then there's the ARC project. In our last minute, could you tell us just a little bit of what's going on that's so exciting?
Well, it's a scale model replica of the ARC. It's going to be about 45 miles south of the museum. It's on an 800-acre site. It's going to be an amusement park, a theme park, I should say. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a full-scaled replica. It's up on supports. It's going to be like 80 feet off the ground or something, over 100 feet off the ground.
And a full-scale model, right? The actual
full-scale
size.
It's over 510 feet long, I believe, 3 decks with all sorts of displays inside. It'll take you all day to go through it. So,
oh, my.
It's going to open next year in May, probably May of 2016. They're going to start putting the wood up later this month or early next month.
Oh, that'll be thrilling. I mean, it's a part of history to see this. There's a videographer on YouTube. He's a Christian, young earth creationist. His videos have millions of views, millions. And he's currently making a video on dinosaur soft tissue. Mm-hmm. And I'm telling you this because, well, for one, I'm sure it'll garner millions of views. But he just went through the museum there, the Creation Museum, on Monday of this week. And he's making a tour of museums to look at dinosaurs and see how they're being presented. And he called me up and he said, Bob, The Creation Museum is so much more exciting than all these other museums. He said, these secular, godless museums are drab and boring. And the Creation Museum was vibrant. It's exciting. It's a destination place to take your family. I said, hey, you need to put that in your video.
Yeah. Well, you know, I've had many friends, many people I've brought to the museum, and they go through it, and I haven't had anyone yet say, well, it's about what I expected, or it wasn't as much as I expected. Everybody's just blown away.
Yes.
It's bigger and more than they could have imagined, yeah. And I think the Ark Encounter is even going to go beyond that.
Oh, it is going to go beyond that. And last comment, if I recall correctly, the chief designer of the museum had worked on exhibits in Hollywood.
Yeah, Patrick Marsh came to AIG probably 15 years ago to design the museum, and he's also heading up the displays in the Ark Encounter as well. He worked for MGM, Disney. He did exhibits for the 84 Olympics in Los Angeles. Mm. He knows how to do museums and how to do displays, right?
Yeah, it's professional. All right, totally. Dr. Danny Faulkner, what an honor to have you on. Thank you, Danny.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
God bless you. That's Dr. Faulkner at Answers in Genesis, the Creation Museum. It's the place to see. In the blood moons, there's a final eclipse for this current tetrad coming up in the fall. And we look forward to that as we do to all of God's works. What a God we have. Our website, realscienceradio.com. Please, if you enjoy the show, please click on the store and check out our science products. They help us stay on the air when you buy them, or make a donation one time or monthly. This is Bob Enyart for Fred Williams and Real Science Radio. May God bless you.
Intelligent design and DNA. The scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune in to Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio.
Hi, this is Bob Enyart. At Real Science Radio, we have a great science store. You can get great science materials from us, DVDs, debates, books, online, realscienceradio.com. Click on the store or by calling us 1-800-8-ENYART. DVDs from Illustra Media that we carry, The Privileged Planet, Unlocking the Mystery of Life, and Darwin's Dilemma. And then there are the two fabulous DVDs from Dr. Carl Werner on Evolution, the Grand Experiment, Living Fossils. You'll want to see those. And then Spike Passaris, formerly with the U.S. Military Space Program, What You Aren't Being Told About Astronomy. And then Mount St. Helens, The Explosive Evidence for Catastrophe. We also have our debate on the age of the Earth, where I got to debate a mathematician from CU up in Boulder, and a geophysicist on this MP3 CD. And finally, my favorite science book, In the Beginning, by Dr. Walt Brown. Just call us at 800-8-ENYART, 800-836-9278, or check out our online store in the science department, either at kgov.com or realscienceradio.com.